Economics is the study of human choice in the world we live. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. By investigating faith in economics, we can learn how they lead to human flourishing. This is the Faith in Economics Podcast, a presentation of the Gortney Institute at Ottawa University.
Welcome to our show today. I am Kevin Ugarteche, producer and graduate assistant for the Gortney Institute. Dr. Ross McCullough, the founder of the Gortney Institute and Wayne Angel Chair of Economics. Dr. Justin Clark, the Menard Family Professor of Philosophy and Ethics. Finally, Dr. Peter Jacobson, the Gortney Professor of Economic Education and Research.
All right, so the competitive market for grocery is probably questionable in the first place. We have some major players in the United States grocery market. Albertsons is one of the players, and they have a variety of names that I didn't research ahead of time, but wherever you're listening, somewhere in the United States, there's a decent chance there's an Albertsons-related grocer. And then the other is Kroger, which is actually my favorite with their ice cream that they make and their peanut butter. The generic brand, natural Kroger brand peanut butter is the best peanut butter on the planet. And so this merger is on the table. And I guess depending on when the time this podcast comes out, we're going to talk about other issues in general. So it's just kind of the concept of whether it's good to have the two largest grocers, the two largest companies in the United States merging like this. And so it's always has to go before antitrust folks with the U.S. government to see if it's a good idea. I'm torn on this one, and I think I know where Dr. Jacobson's going to come in on this, but I don't know for sure. And that's why we thought it'd be a fun topic. But I think I'm okay with these two being blocked to be able to merge. And I'm a low limited government guy, but Peter's probably going to say I'm not if I believe this way. But having these two merge, I think the reduction in competition could impact consumers in a negative way. Their arguments, as usual, arguments for companies merging together is that in order to stay competitive, we have to be large and take advantage of what's called economies of scale in economics. And this just means that by increasing the volume of production that they're doing, they're able to deliver the product at a lower cost, which would mean a lower price ultimately for the consumer. So it has the trimmings of being a good thing if they deliver with low prices and better service and better quality product, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the devil in the details, is that if they are able to garner more and more control of a market where, let's say, those two were competing in some town where there's both an Albertsons and a Kroger brand grocer, will they continue to be competitive on price, or does this give them the luxury raising price and maybe being a little sloppier with customer service and just not having the ever persistent competitor ready to outdo them for the profit incentive? So tried to tee up most of the issues. Peter, where are you coming in on this? And we'll get Justin as well.
Yeah, so the current FTC is pretty terrible. They have passed a lot of new guidelines that have basically knocked us back like 50 years in terms of how we like look at competitive markets. One of the guidelines the FTC uses is the concentration, the HHH concentration index. I don't know what it stands for. Maybe Russ does. It's people's names. But this is based off like old Soviet growth plans. This index doesn't really have any good basis in economic science. We find that efficiencies and market concentration tend to be positively correlated. And there's a reason to think that efficiencies actually cause more concentration of markets. And those efficiencies do get passed on to customers in the form of lower prices. From my perspective, preventions of mergers like this will lead to higher prices for customers. I'm not particularly worried about the lack of competition. I think most people, if they want cheap groceries, go to Walmart. They don't go to Albertsons or Kroger or, you know, any of these bougie grocery brands. I don't shop there. I go to Aldi and Walmart because they're cheaper. And so I'm not really worried about the decrease in competition. I think Albertsons has plenty of competition. They certainly haven't convinced folks like me to shop there, and I'm in a relatively small town with only two options. I don't choose the grocery store brand in my town. So yeah, I'm not particularly worried about the merger. The FTC has already tried to block other things like this. For example, like Spirit Airlines and What's the other one? Does anybody know?
Frontier.
Frontier. They tried to merge, and yes, the FCC has tried to block that. And yeah, that man. But the boy, would that be bad for competition if Spirit Airlines got bigger? That's scary.
Yeah.
Being sarcastic for the listeners at home. Yeah. I assume that the FTC will try to stop Capital One from acquiring Discover, MasterCard, or whatever they're trying to acquire right now. Basically, any major merger or acquisition that's happened over the last, you know, since the Biden administration started has been blocked or attempted to be blocked. So I have no support for the current FTC's decision making. If they showed me even a little bit that they consider these issues on a case-by-case basis, I might be interested in what they have to say, but it seems purely ideological to me at this point.
What are your thoughts here for openers, Justin?
Like Peter, I'm not too worried about this idea that Albertsons is going to suddenly like jack up the price on your favorite peanut butter or whatever, or Kroger or Kralbertsons or Alboger or whatever they're going to call themselves when they're done. I am actually, though, worried about centralization in the food distribution. And I think that this kind of is another step in that direction. So Thomas Massie has a bill to try to make it easier for people to be able to sell local meats in grocery stores. And that gets blocked. And it gets blocked by a lot of times by lobbyists for big food distributors. And I actually think that a bunch of the food that we get is unhealthy in a way that's dishonestly unhealthy. And I think that centralizing food distribution helps create that problem. It's very hard to find, for instance, beef. You know, I buy my beef from this crazy economist who sold me part of a cow. But most people, if you go to the grocery store and you buy beef, it's very hard to know. I mean, now in Missouri, you're allowed to put mRNA vaccines into your beef. I mean, and pretty soon, usually what's allowable is soon mandated. So this idea that, well, everything is going to be centralized and there will be one giant corporation that's then going to distribute the food. In principle, I'm not opposed to it for reasons like economies of scale. But I also think that we don't live in a world where when a firm gets bigger, it's not going to use its strength to lobby Congress to then squash any competitors that might arise or something like this. So on the one hand, I'm in favor of economic freedom. I'm also hesitant to applaud centralization when I see it happening, especially in an area that I think is very important and being ignored by a lot of people on what I would say our side is. That's rambly.
I think your comments on the centralized food distribution are important to think about. What do you think about the incentives, though, of the FTC? Like, I think about centralized food distribution and really, where are we getting all of our cows from, our meats, our broth? That's a huge concentration of food distributors that are then supplying Albertsons and Aldi and Walmart. And so a lot of that probably doesn't have the glamour for the FTC. And so I am a little bit worried that this is kind of some window dressings and kind of a low-hanging fruit. Maybe that's what Peter was hinting at too, that there's other incentives in play that, hey, if we can show the American public that, you know, because Albertsons and Kroger, well, that's, they know those brands. They don't know the other distribution channels that may be even more concentrated than what the, you know, final product market is doing. So that's definitely a concern. I don't want the FTC to just be doing this for easy wins. And then, you know, the incentives of these bureaucrats is to, they need to justify their job. They're being paid X amount per year. And it's like, well, in order, I got to have a win under my belt to do this. If I just let this go through, then am I, you know, people are going to think I'm not doing my job. I'm doing my job if I'm restricting big business, bringing lower prices. It looks better for me. And so I think that's a problem with these situations too, that it definitely concerns me.
Yeah, I could see Justin's point. It's not obvious to me that like having a larger firm dominating a particular industry is going to lead to like more government control and lobbying and things like that. In general, we think that monopolists produce a lower quantity, they restrict output. And so if you have one firm dominating an industry, then you're going to have a monopoly in lobbying for that industry to a certain extent, right? And so actually like competition between like two big players might actually lead to more lobbying, like an increase in attempts to get laws changed because you have more incentive for laws to be changed in your favor rather than somebody else's. In other words, big ossified groups tend to get lazy. This goes back to like the old argument between, I don't know, was it Smith and Hume? I can't remember exactly. I used to have this example off the top of my head, but on like whether or not state religion was a good thing.
Smith and Hume.
Yeah. And Smith was opposed to state religion, even though he was religious, because he thought the competition between religions would make it stronger. Hume was not in favor of religion, but he was in favor of state religion because the Church of England would turn into what it is today, which is basically not a church at all, right? So I think Hume was right about this. And I see something similar in these industries. If you like have one ossified grocery store, I don't actually think there's going to be a lot of lobbying activity. I think there's going to be a lot of internal bureaucratic waste in these places where people are competing over whatever piece of the pie they have left. So,
yeah. Well, I think your comments on Walmart and other forms of competition in this particular market, the contestability of the market might still be there. And so maybe letting these two firms merge, if there is additional economies of scale, you know, could lead to lower prices if it's determined that there's enough other competition out there. And that's where I think you're right. It's hard to measure. Those measurements of the indexes aren't easy to use as a good metric, because there can be one firm, if it's a contestable market, that with easy entry, the level of the ability to start up a firm and start competing can be the competition necessary to keep prices low.
Yeah. I mean, in any case, you have people try to argue like extremes here. Sometimes people will point out that, you know, it can't be the case that firms merging are going to bring about economies of scale, because in that case, they would have already merged, right, and increased profits. But this is just like a mistake of map and territory, which we've done a podcast on before, which is like we have this nice clean model in economics that tells us about how things are in equilibrium, but we're never in equilibrium in any given moment. If it were the case that there was no, you can flip that argument on the head. If it's the case that there is no economies of scale to be had for this merger, then you would expect that all of the merger economies of scale had already been exhausted. In other words, there would be in this world, if all this is like a method of two firms coming together to increase their profits by lowering competition because a monopoly brings in more profits than a duopoly, then we would expect one firm in every industry. We should expect there to be one grocery store already. And so that argument you can flip completely on its head. I am more of the view that these things like happen to be pretty dynamic. If you look at history, the argument is always, well, once this happens, they're going to jack up prices. And just like as a matter of fact, that never happens. Like people worried about this with Walmart. Like when Walmart finally takes over all the small towns, they're going to get in and jack up the prices. Like nominally, there are higher prices at Walmart, but compared to real wages, compared to other things in the economy, Walmart hasn't jacked up prices. They've been here, they've been in small towns for decades and decades, and just that part of the story never happens. And so I, from a consumer standpoint, I'm not worried. I can see Justin's point. In general, I am wary of like mega corporations, though I'm also optimistic because I think that most companies are about as big as they can be right now. I think that there are natural barriers to the size of a company. And there are many companies that can get much larger without encountering these natural barriers.
Yeah, natural barriers being one of the classics is management constraints.
Sure, right? Yeah.
That's usually the key thing to lead to diseconomies of scale, where you get so big that your actual cost per unit starts to rise because of management issues. You think of large corporations having middle management and how the communication channels between the managers and all of that tends to mucky up the system and cause some inefficiencies. And so, yeah, I think you're right that there would probably get to a point. I would maybe throw back the idea of economies of scale being able to change through innovation. So ChatGPT, for instance, maybe it doesn't seem like that would affect the grocery business much, but let's say that it has some sort of impact. And now that business is able to, or that industry does have additional economies of scale because of innovation and technology that has changed over time. So it's possible that what was true 10 years ago of, like you were saying, maxing out the economies of scale concept could evolve, that there's further economies of scale through innovation and technology.
Yeah, which would be good for customers, right? Yeah, so
right,
if the merger is because of economies of scale, consumers benefit from the merger.
Yes.
If the merger is because you can extract more monopoly profits when you merge together, then it's bad for customers.
Yeah.
But I don't think that second explanation makes sense given everything else.
All right, well, this looks like a good spot for a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the bundled good and diversity that we get even from having a couple firms. I think that's an important aspect of life in the United States. And hopefully it continues to get me my peanut butter and ice cream. So we'll be back in just a bit.
Ottawa University has an exciting new major, PPE, which stands for Philosophy, Politics, and Economics. Each of these three fields is interesting in their own right, but they intersect in ways that are important to understand, both individually and for your community. If you find philosophy fascinating, but want to make sure that your study of the subject is practical, if you enjoy economic analysis, but want to see how economic laws interact with moral principles, if you are interested in politics, but want to explore how economic and ethical realities constrain our political choices, you should consider the PPE program at Ottawa University.
The Gorton Institute at Ottawa University is the best place in the Midwest for free enterprise education and its contribution to human flourishing, faith and economics in action. We have some great high school student programs like PPE Fest. This is an event where students get to listen to some world-renowned speakers and then participate in competition geared around philosophy, politics, and economics. Our everyday economics program is just a half day on a Saturday, and we will have an integrated discussion about common sense economics. We have a college credit microeconomics course that runs every 8 weeks. Your high school student can earn college credit for the special price of $200. If you know some students interested in programs like these, contact Peter, Justin, or Russ today. All right, so we're back, and I wanted to pick up with the bundled good concept. It really is at the heart of competition with differentiated products. And so it's been a long kind of textbook explanation that, hey, we do have some inefficiencies that are created potentially with markets with differentiated products. So we have hamburgers that are slightly different, but they're basically a hamburger, right, at the fast food places. And I'm kind of relating this to grocery stores that have all the basics, but yet the experience is a little bit different when you go in there, whether it's customer service or the flooring type, the icons on the walls and whatever. And so economists have generally made this argument, and this is more from a static type of classroom presentation, that, hey, yeah, we're not operating at the lowest cost possible, but we're getting diversity of product and we're satisfying better the diversity of the consumer, which isn't always captured in our aggregate demand type thing. When I say aggregate, I mean even just our demand for grocery products, that, you know, some people like different things. And so this idea of maintaining a number of firms with more selection, there are some gains to society, some benefits that are outside of the fact that, hey, maybe the price could be lower if there was economies of scale. So we let Albertsons and Kroger combine, and now our grocery experience is that they all start to look the same when we go to our grocery store. And now we feel like we're in communist Russia or North Korea, that there's a one size fits all, and I know you need to eat humans. Here is your meat and potatoes and peanut butter and ice cream. And so there's a part of me that thinks that these benefits are well worth it to keep these players operating with some diversity. And I think they're both, as far as I know, both companies are profitable. So yes, they'd like to be more profitable, God bless America. But also, is it really going to serve the public the best to continually be chasing lower cost, lower price? Or at some point, are a little bit higher prices because of bundled goods worth it?
One of the reasons I'm not super concerned about the grocery issue is that I know that profit margins for grocery stores are actually very, very thin, right? And it's also the case that most grocery stores, I don't think they are currently getting caught up in kind of culture worried stuff in a way that other industries are. They seem, for the most part, more neutral than other industries are. And I think it's because they, being the clientele that they serve, they kind of have to cater to everyone's needs. So it's not like somebody wouldn't say, you know, about, you know, the things that Peter might say about Starbucks, right? Or that somebody else would, you know, might say about like Hobby Lobby, right? That they have specific kind of cultures that they cater to. Mm. And since the profit margins are so thin and they don't seem to go in for the kind of cultural worry stuff, it makes me not as worried about this idea that centralization will be used to kind of punish a particular portion of the
electorate or something. Potential political punishment, like you were hitting.
Yeah, but it does, I think, mean they're still able to do that thing that I was worried about, which is like make it the case that it's very difficult to buy like beef that doesn't have mRNA vaccines in it or something like that. And that is just to hide the costs from you that you might otherwise realize were costs.
Yeah.
So my problem isn't that, you know, with centralization, it's that sometimes centralization allows firms to disguise the costs that are being passed on to consumers. And so that's the thing that I could still see happening. And again, like, I'm not saying that we ought to stop the merger. Actually, like, I don't really care one way or the other, but like, this is what I think. If I was, you know, say, Justin, come up with the pros and cons side of the merger, that goes on the con side for me. Because there's also a bunch of cases where, like, if you asked me about Google back in 2009 or 2007, I would have said, Google makes their bread and butter by giving you the search results that you ask for. That's right. How they make the money.
Right.
And then 10 years later, I go like, oh my God, somewhere along the line, Google switched and their business model now is giving you what Google wants you to know.
Yeah.
Right. So I've been wrong about this before.
Yeah.
And so that makes me a little wary to touch this.
So a healthy fear of centralized systems,
again,
is good.
Doesn't make me say like, therefore I'm going to forcibly forbid centralization. Right. And there's also this discussion, like, should we let them centralize? And is that the right question? Or is the question like, should we stop them from centralizing? Like, what should the question be? Like, people should be able to combine unless we tell them otherwise, or is the view like, no, you have to ask permission to do this kind of thing. So
yeah, that's an interesting analogy back to Google.
Yeah. I mean, makes sense. I think they can, but they do it to their own detriment, sort of. And I think actually you're seeing that with Google now. It's hard to imagine Google ever going away. But at the same time, you look at like where young people search to find answers right now. It's actually like TikTok. Like a lot
is that
of
right?
people traffic for Gen Z people is like using TikTok to get answers to questions. I don't know if that'll stay, and maybe that's not the best counterexample because TikTok has its own things with the Chinese government.
Yeah, so we're using the Chinese government.
The economist Murray Rothbard had a really good point about this, which is that as companies centralize, every company has some unique capital goods or like more unique than other. So like grocery stores purchase particular capital goods that no other businesses purchase. I can't imagine an example, but you know, if there's something that like a computer system, a software system, that only grocery stores buy. Yeah. Well, as you begin to centralize that industry, you actually lose competition for that capital good.
Yes.
It goes away. And so actually it becomes very difficult to figure out the prices of those capital goods when they're not being bought and sold by several individuals. In other words, you start to lose your price signals.
Yes.
And so there's like a built in inefficiency to the centralization. And that might actually be like not it might be the cause rather than the consequence. And so why is Google slowly moving us away from pieces of information that we actually want? Well, it's because Google has a really hard time pricing all their different technologies, buying and selling their capital. And so how do they fix that? Well, they have to use bureaucracy. And all these random Google bureaucrats have their own agendas and their agendas start to leak into the company. And so I think that what we might be seeing with Google right now, what we could see if we get, you know, these grocery store mergers that lead to like dishonest or, you know, not completely transparent, you know, discussions of like what's in the food. I think that that is a symptom of a larger illness that happens when companies merge. And I think it does make them very vulnerable. I think this is the step before a very large company falls, is I'm going to start doing what I want to do rather than the customer. Because what that reflects to me is the bureaucrat inside the company has more control than they used to have rather than the customer.
And that's probably because we can no longer measure customer valuation compared to cost of provision of service. And so we're doing this bureaucratic thing instead. So I think that companies like Google, if they don't turn around, will find themselves on the way out, is my answer. And, you know, again, that's a pretty bold prediction. Maybe people were making that 10 years ago with Google, but I'm willing to say it now.
Well, I guess you made me think of a fear of that leading to more regulation. So we allow, let's go back to the grocery example, the grocery stores merge, and then we have these supply chain or the intermediate inputs that are, you know, price signals are weakened, and somehow it is unearthed that, you know, consumers are at a disadvantage now because of the power of the company. And then the answer to that is not to break apart the company, but to have the government continue to regulate it more or better. And then we're into some sort of regulated, you know, industry with heavier and heavier regulation, which in my opinion leads to greater and greater inefficiencies. And so in kind of a counterintuitive way, maybe the government sticking their nose in, keeping Albertsons and Kroger from merging, is actually helpful in the long term to keep the government out of the industry in the future if it ends up causing those sorts of problems.
Yeah, I mean the issue of that is, like, what you're doing on the flip side is just maintaining an industry that doesn't have good price signals now. And so if you are doing these, like, preventing mergers and things like this, then you have less ability for firms to take advantage of economies of scale,
yeah,
which means that we've got sort of this ossified industry. The ossified industry can't use the price signals as well, and so on. I mean, ultimately, in either case, like, the bad version of what could happen is socialism. What do we call it when the government enforces a lack of prices for capital goods? That's called socialism. You know, you can describe it a lot of different ways, but that's the fruit of socialism, is not having competitive prices for capital goods. So
I agree, I think, with both of you. For Peter, the Rothbard point is a great one, and I love it, but it only works if industries are allowed to, if big firms are allowed to fail.
Right.
Too,
yep.
Right?
That's another good one.
Is the point that when that centralization occurs, like, look, Google is now tentacles deep into the national security apparatus, you know.
Sure.
So it's unclear even, you know, if Google dies, you know, I certainly won't shed a tear. And I do agree with you that it's, like, it's unclear. It's kind of hard to see how they're going to go away. It does seem like they are going to go away because it's unclear how they're getting the money right now. All their since AdWords only works if people are searching and getting the things that they want, etc. So yeah, I think that's great, and that only works if we allow these big firms to fail.
Sure.
And to Russ's point, like, well, might this actually stop? I take it your point is, like, well, if we don't allow them to combine, then they won't be able to lobby us to fail. But if the only way we have to stop them from combining is by using this other giant bureaucracy that has to be built, right? Then it's like, choose your bureaucracy. And this is a choose your adventure book where all the options suck. And so I don't know, you know, and against that, you can say, like, well, I mean, at least we can envision Kroger Albertsons failing, right?
Mm-hmm.
For some, I find it harder to envision the FTC being allowed to fail.
Right.
So yeah, this is just, again, my position of, like, I don't know. I don't know that all these options seem, I'm scared of all of them.
Well, yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the too big to fail, because that is kind of where I was going. I didn't really think about it. So the banking industry is one of the most heavily regulated industries. And so if the grocery industry, this merger, and then maybe there's one down the road or whatever, and then it's like, oh, some event happens that we can't even imagine right now. And it's, oh, well, we can't let Albertsons and Kroger fail. The Kroger Albertsons fail. So then there's some sort of bailout with tax dollar money. And yeah, it's ugly. So I think this whole thing of not being able to envision, like when you brought up the Google thing of what that could morph into in 10 to 20 years, makes me think that keeping these companies from getting that big maybe isn't a bad thing. I don't know. It does seem to be a move more and more towards centralization, which I think has the troubles, but these are the trade-offs.
Yeah, I think it the point is valid that like we live in a world of second best, and like first best solutions are really obvious and easy to come to, and second best solutions just aren't.
Yeah.
And so I think that you can spin this issue any way to suit your belief about whether or not the merger is a good idea. My first best, I think in the first best world, the answer is to allow the merger to happen. But I'm more than willing to concede that, like, yeah, if the merger happens, like we can imagine this like super grocery store chain having more power than the individual ones to lobby, maybe even without the incentive, the power outweighs the lack of incentive and they gain more control. And there's no way to dismiss those possibilities out of hands. Like, yeah, that in life, sometimes there's a downside that you just like can't get a good probability on. So
I guess if we could somehow have some sort of fixed rule rather than the discretion of the FTC on whether this stuff could happen would be somehow better, but maybe it's too complex that there's no simple rule. Because I think that's what that concentration ratio tries to do is come up with some sort of rule. But again, there's complexities beyond being able to do that.
Yeah, I almost prefer if they just don't even pretend like there's some sort of science behind it, because there isn't. Like whenever you're using ratios like that, you're like using history to describe theory, and it just doesn't work. Like those sorts of indexes are situationally based, but they're trying to make general pronouncements. And so I almost would rather it be a smoke and mirrors, I'm the great and powerful Oz FTC situation. So at least like no one's pretending that like we have the expertise of, you know, thousands of economists supporting this, when really it's like the literature is pretty well settled that mergers in general do lead to lower prices. Like, yes, theoretically possible that they wouldn't or whatever.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. Well, and I kind of hang my hat on if something unimaginable happens, and they're running into problems in the grocery industry, I like the idea of having two firms that aren't working together fighting for their own solution for survival than one big firm having to come up with a solution. I think the two people fighting for a solution independently is going to come to better results for society than one big firm.
Is this why you're in favor of divorce?
Well, I didn't think it would come up, but yeah, once again, you pinned me down. All right. Well, any other last words on this? I think we circled the drain on some important concepts. I'm not sure we came up with a exact answer, but I'm hoping in the long run, Russ gets his peanut butter and ice cream. That's where I started off, and that's where we'll
end. Yeah, I mean, to summarize my position, like I think that there's reasonable arguments either way. My initial dismissiveness and flippancy about this is based on the fact that like I don't really believe that politicians pursue best outcomes for society. I believe they pursue best outcomes for themselves, and that's true of bureaucrats too. And so like I just don't have any expectation that the FTC particularly cares if this helps consumers, because they're so distant from consumers in terms of what keeps them in check, that I just don't see that being a strong pull on them. Whatever makes the bureaucracy survive is probably what they're going to support and do. I don't really like the bureaucracy. So almost by nature, I'm opposed to everything that they do, because if they think it's best for the bureaucracy to stop the merger, and I don't like the bureaucracy, then I probably want to be against it. But I'm not terribly invested, because I think real politics plays a big role here, where it's like, it doesn't really matter if I, you know, fight their concentration ratio, because that's not really what they're talking about.
Right, right. And I think on this one, in summary for me, is that I think this is one area where I'm okay with them, maybe for the wrong reasons, but the FTC in pursuit of their own interest keeps these companies from combining together. I think in the long run, I think that ends up being, the Baptist and bootleggers, our bootleggers and Baptist concept, to where what they happen to be doing for reasons I don't agree with ends up getting the result that I think would be best for society, but maybe not.
You recognize, though, that the prohibition was bad for society in the Baptist example, right?
So I meant conceptually having opposing.
We can imagine someone doing the right
thing. Coming up with a joint venture. Yeah, so.
My bafflement is that I think it's actually in the bureaucracy's best interest to allow the merger. And then. So I think that historically the FTC is always opposed to all mergers, and that this is political for the reason that Peter said. They're just kind of doing the thing that they always do.
Yeah.
I'm all over the place.
All right. Well, that's a wrap. This has been a production of the Gorton Institute here at Ottawa University. I'd like to thank you all for listening. A 5-star rating helps people find us, and otherwise pass this along to your friends and family that might like to take a listen. Other than that, be fruitful and multiply. Thanks.